cliffcentral.com.
All right, it's Friday, it's the 1st of November. Ah, it's downhill to Christmas and December.
And 8 Mondays until Christmas.
What?
It's great. It's so nice. I love it. This is my favorite time of year.
No one buys presents anymore, do they?
Yes, people do.
People do.
I was just talking about it yesterday. My sister ordered all of hers online and she had the whole box delivered yesterday. So she doesn't have to worry about it at all.
Oh, doesn't your family not?
Well, our family's shrunk a bit, yeah. Some have died.
Oh, there we go.
You know.
What a...
It's a Secret Santa's just not that much fun anymore.
I'm glad I brought that up. This is uplifting.
It's not much of a secret if there's two of you in a room.
Yeah.
Secret Santa, let's spin the lazy Susan and see who gets the present.
Yeah. Most people in our family are being supported by others because there's no money. So, you know.
Jesus.
That's great.
Yeah. Anyway, can't wait for January. Bah humbug.
Oh, I'm so glad I brought that up for you.
Hey guys, where are the old sex show podcasts? That show was epic. All you have to do is go onto cliffcentral.com and just type in the sex show. It's all there.
Live female orgasm.
Go and look it up. I mean,
my.
Or you want me to come to your house and type it in for you?
We've done a lot of shows about orgasms.
All right. And then a couple of other comments. That song, Then He Kissed Me, originally by The Crystals, featuring The Goodfellas, the classic Scorsese gangster film. Today also marks the release of The Irishman, the latest Scorsese film starring De Niro, Pacino, and Pesci. Coincidence?
Wow.
Nothing is by coincidence. Why do you think I played it? But thank you for picking up on that. Some people are paying attention. Sean. All right. We're going to talk about Gugu and first dates later on. We've also got the producer of the show, who also produces a bunch of other shows, coming in to talk to us. So lots of stuff to get to. What do you got for us, Leanne?
Fancy a Friday burger?
Yes, I said yes before I even knew what it was. What, go on.
So what would you go for, a McDonald's or a Burger King? Mm. If your choices were McDonald's, Burger King, and now we have Starbucks as well, remember?
I feel like with all the love in the world, we're going to regret this.
Says no.
Subway.
My favorite burger, you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
In America, you get this place called Shake Shack.
Oh, did you go?
Shake Shack is fucking amazing. I didn't have it this time. I went, there's one at JFK at the airport.
Yes.
And I should have had one of those then. But they are the best burgers in the world.
I had it there. I rolled into my plane and just passed out for hours.
You had the veggie version, right?
Yes, yeah. With the milkshake made out of real ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then I got those cheesy chips. Oh,
yeah.
Makes you want to slap your mom.
What's the
competition? McDonald's and Burger King have been graded on their beef.
Mm-hmm.
One of them got an F.
Uh-oh.
Mm.
I hope it's...
Is this in America or is it locally?
It's America, but do remember that we have the exact same meat. Okay.
For like taste purposes.
It's actually for the overuse of antibiotics.
And okay. They haven't found like fecal matter in it.
Like I've never really worried about things that have got antibiotics in them. I'm like, I've had so much myself.
Yeah, you don't worry about antibiotics. No. Your data being used.
Apparently, you should worry about it because if you eat beef from a cow that's been given antibiotics, it could impact your health, making you less resistant to certain diseases. So let's look at the list.
Yeah.
Chipotle in the US got an A. McDonald's, a C. Starbucks and Burger King, an F. Now, the reason why Starbucks got an F is because they didn't even bother to fill out the survey about its antibiotics policies.
That makes it a little sketchy.
Yeah. So don't worry about eating stuff from Starbucks because it just means that they were too lazy to fill in the form.
Jesus.
So what happens is that many producers give healthy animals antibiotics to help them survive an often overcrowded and unsanitary farm.
Yeah, it's a horrible place for these animals to live and they're bound to pick up diseases just by being there.
Yet it causes resistance in us as humans, so it's not a good idea.
Yeah, you see, what will happen is, this is also where the superbugs come from, is that people are just plying animals and humans with antibiotics. Mm. Some of the courses are never completed. Some of these bacteria that we're fighting are never really totally wiped out, and therefore they come back stronger. They're genetically... Remember, bacteria produce a new generation in a very short space of time compared to, you know, big species like us. So what ends up happening is that they can very quickly, over a short period of time, develop a strain, a mutation or a change in their genetic structure, which allows them to overcome that antibiotic. So we're always on the back foot trying to invent a new antibiotic to be able to beat these things.
Yeah. My mum had one of those superbugs when she was in hospital.
Oh, that's some scary stuff, man.
Called Pseudomonas, which is a type of...
Yeah.
The word just...
A bacterium. A type of. It's an infection.
A lung... What's it? Pneumonia. It's a type of pneumonia. And she got to... They put her on antibiotics, didn't work, and so they started taking her up the rank of antibiotics.
Yeah.
She got to the final one that was available in South Africa. And they said, the next thing is we have to import from overseas. Oh. But she managed to get through it on that final one. So out of interest, Starbucks and Burger King, Domino's and Pizza Hut, all of them got Fs. But now that we know that it's maybe because they just didn't fill in a form.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could be
Listen,
that.
You take your chances. Don't go and eat takeaways at some fast food place and then complain when it doesn't work out for you. I mean, what do you think their level of care really is?
Yeah.
Honestly, who are you, the Queen of England, that you expect everyone to sanitize the kitchen when you drive up in your shit car to order from the window?
So it's not like Quran beef.
Yeah.
and in fact, on that note,
if you think you're the Dalai Lama, go to a proper restaurant.
Yeah. On that note, I saw the paste that McDonald's use to make their chicken nuggets.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But... it actually hasn't put me off, because if you bite into a chicken nugget, you can see it's not a piece of chicken breast.
Yeah.
It's some kind of mishmash.
Mm-hmm. Can we stop talking about this?
Yeah,
it makes me
could.
Very uncomfortable. So gross. It's so gross.
That gurgling gets me every time. You know who was gurgling?
Who?
It's this woman in Indiana. She was found with a python wrapped around her neck.
Oh, boy. That has got to be the most terrifying thing that can happen to you.
Where was she, though?
She woke up to this.
No, she was in a house that had 140 snakes. It was like a reptile home. And she apparently was not the owner or the owner of the home or the snakes. She apparently visited this place like twice a week. But it was a home that was apparently set up to collect reptiles.
Oh, man. You know, when you live in a house like that and there's all these reptiles running around, you have no one to blame but yourself when one of the reptiles turns on you. Honestly.
So 911 got a call at 9 o'clock at night. They went to find an unresponsive woman with an 8-foot reticulated python wrapped around her neck. The medics arrived at the house and attempted life-saving measures. I wonder what they did, though, when they saw the snake. Did they get it off of her? I suppose it's non-venomous.
I would just cut the head off.
Oh, my word. You can't do that. It's someone's pet.
I'm sorry. A python tries to throttle me, I'm going to cut its head off. What else are you going to do?
The sheriff.
Can you throttle the python? Can you grab it around its throat and start... Do you think it'll let go? Or do you think it'll tighten up?
I wonder where its throat starts and ends. The sheriff said this was a tragic accident with loss of human life. It wasn't... If you're in a house with so many snakes...
No, it's not a tragic accident. That's meant to be.
And she's going to have an autopsy. Why?
How many times on this show do we tell people, do not mess with wild animals? And when the wild animals do what wild animals do, you can't be cross and you can't say, oh, this is a tragedy, or, oh, poor Sarah. If Sarah went into a house full of reticulated pythons and one of them did what a python does, sorry.
Well, exactly.
Bye-bye, Sarah. Bye-bye.
Totally agree. Meanwhile, in China, a man was bitten by a snake on his finger. And he sawed his finger off in an attempt to save his life.
Yes.
He believed that the snake that had bitten him was super venomous. Turns out it wasn't. It was just unnecessary that he did that.
So he sawed his finger off for nothing.
Yeah. He got it quite high up as well.
Oh, that is so terrible.
And apparently this snake's venom is actually used to treat rheumatoid arthritis and pain in tendons and bones.
So it actually would have helped him.
So he had heard that his death would be instant, so he cut his finger off with a knife.
Let me tell you, the time you need to get the knife to cut through your finger, the blood's already gone through to your heart. So it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late to apologize. It's too late. This thing's already in you and the venom is in there, and you've got to accept your fate.
So this doctor of Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, he's at a hospital. He said that he often sees patients that have tied string around their limbs, etc. And he's seen people even burning themselves to counteract the snake venom. But by the time they arrive, their limbs are often necrotic and also from the burning.
Yeah, you can't use these ancient medicinal practices and these folk tales and this witchcraft stuff to try and cure a real problem. Like, there is anti-venom for a lot of these snakes, but you have to get it in time.
So when I was living in McGregor...
Yes.
Here's another story.
And had an encounter with a Cape Cobra, which is, you once a Cape Cobra is bitten, you have about 30 minutes to live. And it made me think, what happens if I do get bitten? Because I would traipse around in felts. And so I phoned a hospital and I said to them, do you have anti-venom? And they said, no, we would have to take you to the Tigerberg Hospital, which is...
so far away.
2 hours away.
You'll never make it.
So, and I said, well, doesn't the local hospital here in Robertson have anti-venom? No, and also because it expires so quickly that they actually don't stock it.
No, you can't keep it.
So there were quite a few stories sitting at the Kroeg there in McGregor.
Wow.
Of people who had been bitten and then
driven
to Tigerberg. And... The main thing apparently is to not panic, because that makes your heart beat faster and it circulates the venom.
Then I would have been dead in seconds.
Yeah, I wouldn't make it.
Sorry about that. A friend's dog, this is an interesting story. This is from Lorette. A friend's dog, a setter, was bitten by a cobra on their wine estate this week. The dog is on a ventilator, day two now, 12,000 rand a night. Not sure whether the dog will pull through. Listen.
Jeez, it's amazing it's come this far.
On Wednesday, my colleague found a pregnant Cape Cobra in a field across from her house. That's horrible. Have you guys seen a movie called Contagion? This is from Ruth. She says, it's based on a true story. It's where bat feces were ingested by a pig who was then eaten, which mutated and caused a major virus that humans caught.
Oh gosh, I've eaten bat.
You've eaten bat? How did that happen?
In the Seychelles, they've got forests full of bats, and they're a delicacy. I've never seen so many little bones on my plate.
That's horrible.
As I did from this bat.
Sia's so not enjoying it.
It was like very dark chicken.
Eating flying dogs. Bats look like dogs in the face.
They do, or like rats.
It depends how big they are. The very big ones definitely look like dogs. The smaller ones look like mice.
Some look cute. I follow one on Instagram.
You follow a bat?
Yes. Well, it's a woman who owns this pet bat that she rescued. And it's got the cutest little face. She wraps it in towels and feeds it things. And it's very fun to watch.
So it doesn't fly. It doesn't get to do what bats do.
No, it's a problem child.
Well, I see, talking about the hamburgers that we had a conversation about earlier on, that the Impossible Whoppers are a massive hit with Burger King, fueling its best quarter in 4 years. Vegetarians taking to burgers, which is very interesting.
There's the Impossible and there's one other. Come on, Sia, you should know.
Beyond?
Yes, Beyond.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, very cool. So there's some interesting stuff for you to put on your menu. Mm. What else is going on?
So if we'll be talking about first dates and Google's appearance in a little bit late in the show, I think I found some very odd stories about some dating and other people who are having massive relationship issues. So here goes. There is a Cape Town woman who's actually dealing with a very unique case and taking it to court, whose six-year marriage has fallen apart because her husband told her he was gay. Now, we hear stories like this.
Hold on a second. Just go back.
The marriage has fallen apart. The husband has now 6 years.
Okay.
But now here's the kicker. Mm-hmm. She's taking him to court to say, actually, you've lied to me all of these years, so this marriage has been false, and now I'm going to sue you for 9 million rands in damages.
South African woman.
Yes, it's going down in Cape Town. The woman's application to the High Court in Cape Town asked for 5 million rands for emotional pain and psychological trauma, and 4 million rands for loss of income and financial prejudice.
Jesus, are you allowed to do that? Can you really sue for someone
turning gay?
Well, he probably didn't turn gay. He probably always was, or he's somewhere on the scale, and can get it up for women.
Well, but this is how they're defining it and defending it with the case. The basis of the damages claim and the extraordinary sums which are sought is that the husband is alleged to have misrepresented to her prior to the marriage that he was straight, and that he said that actually I do want to marry you and have kids with you.
You hear a lot of these stories, huh? You hear these stories about these guys who, like, they get to 50 or 60 years old. I mean, look at Caitlyn Jenner, for example.
And then a switch just goes off in that head.
Well, I don't know if it's a switch or they suddenly decide now's the time or whatever. Mm. You hear about the, and it happens with girls too. I mean, I've heard stories about women who have been happily married, they've had kids, and then suddenly they decide somewhere along the line, now, you know what? I've had enough of these men. I'm going to be a lesbian and I'm going to go and live with my girlfriend. I know someone who did this. And then and she lives with this woman for the rest of her life. Mm. And that's just... Now, I don't know if that's misrepresentation or if it's just how the relationship changes. People change. As Leanne says, some people are on a spectrum of gay or straight. You know, it's very hard to pin this stuff down. I don't know that a judge is going to be able to figure out whether there was misrepresentation here or whether it was just someone who, you know, they changed.
See, I think it would be smart if they went with that in defense.
Yeah, well, you can't disprove it, can you?
Yeah, good point.
You can't go into court and say, well, give me evidence of how straight or how gay you are, which is exactly why it's ridiculous in society that people even care about this stuff.
You know, she's clearly so scorned.
Mm.
Nine million rands.
Apparently, I've known a woman before whose husband turned out to be gay, and she took many years to get over the situation. Apparently, it's really difficult for a straight person whose husband or wife turns out to be gay.
Look, don't you think that people are, you invest so much. Like, if you're going to get married to someone, you really are putting everything into it. Otherwise, why get married?
Exactly. That's part of why they're also taking this to court. So this is how they further go on to explain it. They say, by any standard, this seems to be an excessive amount. But in our case, it's all about our societal standing. The husband's means and the scale of the litigation thus far. This is why the wife and her legal team are truly standing by going for that 9 million rands.
Yeah, I feel sorry for her because that's really horrible. She thought this was the guy for her and obviously it didn't happen. And then I feel sorry for him because he clearly wasn't happy there either. But shouldn't they both be thrilled that it's now over? There isn't a sham anymore?
I think it's ridiculous.
Well, from a scorned woman to a very petty woman. So, a US woman has just filed for divorce after her husband cheated on her with a family friend. And just to put that extra and final knife into her husband's back as she was finalizing the divorce, the court ultimately ordered her to pay him a settlement amount of $7,500. That's the only resolution they could get to. Mm-hmm. And she thinks, how do I have to pay him after I was done dirty in this equation? But she said, fine, I'll abide by the rules of the court. But she said, I have a loophole. So she has now paid $7,500 in 10 cent coins.
Sure, that's so resentful and bitter and angry.
I love this woman. I don't even know her. The husband got 10 boxes filled with coins, all weighing up to a total of 158 kilograms. What are you meant to do with that?
Well, the thing is, just as quickly as she was able to get those coins from the bank is just as quickly as he'll be able to get them in notes.
This is how we know of this, because the wife was actually the one who posted about this on Facebook, and this is what she wrote. She said, listen to how petty this sounds. She says, so a man that I was married to, bless his heart, decided to do me the biggest favor of my life and slept with his own friend's wife.
Sure.
The woman who attended my wedding and watched me hold hands and look into the eyes of the man I loved and promise him my forever, all while knowing damn well they were sleeping together. Well, I busted them, and that led us into divorce court. And for some god-awful reason, I was ordered to pay him $7,500. And so, well, that's why
him in coins.
Her bank was on board and agreed to pay out the sum in coins, and she gladly delivered it.
Well, he must just go and take them into the bank. Yeah, it's the bank's problem at the end of the day, because he's now going to drop them off at the bank. His bank will have to count them.
Imagine that.
It's so petty. Apparently, according to Dr. Jonathan Witt, with most cobras, you don't need anti-venom. You just need a decent emergency department and an ICU, and then obviously some luck.
Some luck.
Yeah. So you don't need anti-venom with all cobras.
Yeah. I went to the Robertson Hospital once because of an allergic reaction to a jar of jalapeno peppers.
Peppers.
And I got there and I was in respiratory distress and my body was covered in welts.
Good Lord.
And there was no doctor at this hospital.
Yeah.
It was just nurses.
Yeah.
They had to phone a doctor who arrived half an hour later after they'd given me a handful of prednisol, which is a cortisone. I took like 15 or 20 Jesus. Tablets. Yeah.
Leanne.
But there was just no doctor. You know how scary that is. So let's hope that emergency department can deal with a cobra bite.
Well, a few important anniversaries today. First of all, somebody makes a good point here. Let me give credit where it's due. This is from Tony. Tony says, I cannot believe Ben comes in and goes away without mentioning Gary Player's birthday today. The shame. Also, today is the anniversary of Harambe's death. Rest in peace, Harambe. Harambe forever.
Oh, hashtag thoughts and prayers.
You remember Harambe the gorilla was that gorilla who was living in that enclosure in the Cincinnati Zoo, and a stupid child got into the enclosure.
Oh, yes.
And had to kill Harambe. Yeah. And the stupid child continues to live. It's completely unfair. Mm.
Harambe no more.
Many people blown away by Leanne's stories. Riet says, I killed a 1.8-meter black spitting cobra on my farmhouse porch in the Fish River.
Ooh,
it took me 2 hours to fight this animal and kill it.
Oh, my word. What a mare.
Two hours of fighting an almost 2-meter-long spitting cobra.
Gary, is funny to you about this?
I'm imagining Riet kind of...
And this thing spitting.
There was probably a lot of time with her inside planning what the fuck to do.
I'm thinking of her as she's standing there with like one of those welding masks on.
Oven gloves.
Like, come on, you bitch. Come on. And it's going... And then she's lunging forward with like a pango.
2 meters.
She says, hang on, it fought me for 2 hours. I was the only adult at home and I had no gun. My kids were in the house watching the ordeal through the window.
It's not funny.
It really isn't. That's when I pack the kids up and I say, kids, we gotta go. The house now belongs to a spitting cobra. Just hand it over.
KV says he understands these people who have these relationships where they actually change their sexuality. He says, good morning. I've been having sex with a lady for years and she is a crazy mad-ass lesbian.
Wow. Oh.
She threatens to screenshot our chats and send them to my wife if I don't give her sex. I feel so trapped.
Wait, she's a lesbian?
And you're married.
And she's having sex with him.
It's complicated.
It is. You don't say.
So he is having sex with this lesbian. And if he doesn't keep having sex with this lesbian, then she's going to tell his wife.
So is the lesbian...
No, the point here is that he's cheating, everybody.
No. No, Leanne. The point is the lesbian is forcing him to cheat.
Now he can't stop.
The point here is blackmail lesbian. Here.
Dipping your hand into the cookie jar here.
It is blackmail.
Leanne's life seems like a series of...
series
I haven't even heard it. I don't know. I'm laughing. What like that 2-meter cobra.
It's from Carl. He says... Leanne's life seems like a series of cataclysmic fuck-ups. Are they all true?
This completely, 100%
unbelievable.
True.
Yeah.
Leanne, when you look at the rest of your life, do you look at it with, so much more to experience?
No,
or do you go, uh-oh?
I don't even know if I'm going to wake up tomorrow. That's the way I look at it.
What an optimistic viewpoint and perspective.
I mean, how much more do I need to experience? You know?
Good point. Yeah. I'll take up crocheting and find a stoop somewhere now.
You must be exhausted with the life you live.
I'm so tired.
I have a bit of bad news.
Oh.
This is quite sad stuff. Clara Niguala has died. I remember Kalani very well. He was at 702 with me for some time. In fact, we all did like midnight shifts when I started off there. What is it, 18 years ago, maybe? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had cancer, and then he managed to go into remission, but clearly it came back. So,
sure, that's heavy.
Yeah, from our side, I just wanted to say, you know, rest in peace.
Oh, wow.
My friend, good guy. He had a really great career, and he leaves his family, who obviously... you know, deserve all our respect and love at this time. So there's just a thought that came in. Breaking news there. Clara Niguala is dead. So there we go. All right. Bit of bad news this morning in between all the stupidity and hilarity. I do want to talk about Gugu on...
First
date.
Oh boy, here we go.
Where do we start?
So is this true for starters? And please bring the producer in here, see. I want to know what kind of maniac puts Gugu on TV.
You know...
No, don't go, me. You know you're a maniac.
No. Okay.
So here is an interesting... I don't know if this is true or not.
Uh-huh.
But apparently, according to one of the messages that I just got now, apparently Gugu said... he was talking to this girl. She said to him, I've had a hard life. And he said, did you walk here from Kenya?
That is true.
Yes.
What kind of thing is that to say?
I heard and I cringed.
It's, I don't know. Like, you know I've got a sense of humor, Gareth. Have you seen the episode?
Yes, I have. Yeah. All right. I made notes.
Let me open up my notes as well.
Let's have Leanne and Sia's notes, and then we'll talk to Ed Worcester, who's the executive producer at Rapid Blue Productions for First Date South Africa, and we'll find out about some of the other shows he's been involved in. But let's go with your synopsis first.
So firstly,
this is very exciting.
Google.
Yes, Leanne.
I hear your accent every day, but hearing it on TV just highlights it, right?
Okay.
And you know, I had a thing for The Bachelor, the previous Bachelor's accent. It drove me insane. Lee.
That dude, yeah.
Well, So the first thing, one of the first things you said when you were asked, you know, what are you doing here? You said, you ended off by saying, that's why I'm here.
Really?
Say that's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
There we go, exactly like that.
So
you dissected literally the show, didn't you?
Yes.
She's broken it down.
Of course I did.
It was that deep.
Just the points that I enjoyed. Uh-huh. You kind of minced over to the bar in the beginning.
What do you mean? He minced.
Yeah. Mm. It's like
sauntered over there.
Sauntering
really
gate.
What I loved before you went to the bar was selling yourself. And by the way, I have to say, you came off really well. I'm not even BSing. You were a real gentleman. Mm. You were very wonderful to Cindy, your date. You kept the conversation flowing. It was really, really great. But comparing a woman to a car, Gugu. I know you love cars, but...
Well, look.
Also, you said...
Wait.
Look at this clown over here.
No, I did not.
You called her a clown.
I did refer to her as a clown, but context is everything in this, Leanne. You can't just drop... He says, look at this clown over here.
That's what he did say. He said, if my ideal woman were to be a car, she'd probably be a V8. Simply because she'd have a big heart like the engine. I'm like, but I want to be called a car. I don't know.
Go on. This is their feedback.
So his date, her name is Cindy. She's a photographer.
She is.
Much more refined than Google.
Oh, okay.
24 years old.
From Kenya.
But there was a tiny, I wouldn't call it a red flag. I'd call it like an amber flag.
Mm-hmm.
She's 24 years old and she's never been in a relationship before.
Mm-hmm.
So now you wonder why. I just was like,
And you asked for someone exotic, right?
I did.
Now, a woman from Kenya who looks like a model.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, you don't get more exotic than that.
Well, there's different kinds of exotic, Leanne. There's that kind of exotic, African exotic, and then there's the Mediterranean exotic.
Is that what
but
you
Google,
are?
But Google, we live in South Africa.
Like. No. Hey?
We live in South Africa, yeah, not in the Mediterranean.
Over here. So I think there was a breakdown in communication when they asked me, said to me, what are you looking for, young G? And I said, exotic. They said, say no more. So I thought they knew.
Well, I think it was amazing that you guys both clicked on loving a lot of adrenaline sports, and she was interested in cars as well.
She was.
And her type was tall, dark, and handsome.
And in walked Gugu Masoko.
Well, what am I missing there, guys?
No, that's another genuine compliment.
Oh, thank you.
You were very gentlemanly, though, I must say.
Thank you.
She had an icebreaker question she wanted to ask or something. And
she had like a box of questions.
You said, ask me some icebreaker questions if you want. Break them out.
What? I said that.
Yes, you did.
What's that again? Please read it. Okay.
Ask me some icebreaker questions if you want.
Uh-huh.
Break them out.
Break them out.
I don't
off.
Know. I speak like that, Leanne. I've never.
You speak like that.
I don't know.
But yeah, Google.
But you
was,
were just yourself, which
Google
I really
was minding
enjoyed.
His own business at the table. Next thing, Cindy reaches into her bag and whips out this big box of questions.
Questions.
Which is a little.
It's like, let's play a game in the restaurant type of thing.
Which was a little weird.
I want to cut to the chase here, because as fun as this is for me, I'm bored to death. So did you eventually.
You are bored to death.
Did you, well, tell me, did you eventually like feel anything? Did you think there was any potential here for like something to happen?
Cindy was a very nice person, I must say.
Oh, that's such a PC answer. I'm talking about, did you feel anything? I'm not asking you if she's a nice person.
You want me to be brutally honest? Like,
would you date this woman?
Are you dating her?
It looked very promising when you guys left the show, I have to say.
We're not dating.
Okay.
I think I'd probably walk all over her. She's way too nice.
Oh.
You both agreed to a second date.
We did.
It's never going to happen, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
You were being polite.
I was being very polite.
So this is a failure. This is a failure of your character.
Uh huh.
Because you must not promise things that you have no intention of delivering. It shows a lack of integrity. No, forget about that.
Wait, hold on.
I'm talking about you.
I know.
You listen to Gareth now. Okay, Gareth's going to help you with some life
let's
advice.
Say Gareth advice.
All right. You son of a bitch. Just listen to me. Yeah. Right? Here's a way to get ahead in your life.
Yeah.
Don't promise you can have a second date just because you don't want to hurt her feelings. Say to her, like, you know, Cindy, it was fun. This has been an interesting TV show. It's been a great experience. I'm not going to call you again. You don't have to call me again.
No.
Let's move on.
Gareth, say that. If you've seen the show, you are put on the spotlight right at the end.
Can't say that, Gareth.
Yeah, no,
answer the question at the same time almost. So,
with her right
very
next
awkward.
To me.
Yeah, I wouldn't
He's
have
not
going
to turn to her and go, bitch, please. He's just going to go, no, it's not going to happen. You and I know it. Let's just move on.
No.
It's all fun.
Can't just be like that.
All right, let's bring
I'll
in
be
the
single
let's
forever.
Bring in the producer. He knows what he's talking about.
I think
Ed Worcester, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Cliff. Hi, everybody.
Nice to see you. Yeah.
Thanks for having me here.
Sure.
I think to be fair to Gugu, a lot of guys and girls on the show.
Yeah.
In that moment, got caught up in the moment. They'd been together for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of chemistry. You had a lot of chemistry with Cindy.
A lot of chemistry.
And I think in that moment, a second date seemed very plausible, actually. And you walked off into the sunset.
We did.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Looked good.
How hard is it to put the show together? Because you people are so complicated, Ed. How do you even begin?
Well, you know, we started off with a big call for entry.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a lot of entries?
And we got the most entries of almost any show that we've done in the last few years. So nearly 3,000 people.
People are really hungry for love.
People are hungry for love. They're desperate to find the one.
Uh-huh.
And I think people have seen First Dates, you know, other shows from around the world. And there's this sense that a lot of work goes on in the background. You know, work that you can't do yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have access to a database of 3,000 people or 1,500 women. So we did all of that for you. We ticked your boxes.
Exactly. You guys are good.
I think the matching you know. on these things is just amazing. Because I watch US, I watch Australia, and the matching is like spot on.
Yeah.
It's impeccable.
So, you know, on...
Except for that horrible woman who was on last night from Durban.
There was a horrible woman?
She's like... She was so nasty.
She was just, a mean person.
A very, very mean person.
Wait, was she the one with the dude who lives with his mom?
Yes.
She was so mean. Jeez, she boy.
A boudoir photographer.
So you don't script these people at all. You have to take your chances. I wonder how much stuff falls on the cutting room floor on this show, because a lot of it is boring. Like when Leanne and Sia were talking endlessly, it felt like interminably about Gugu's date. Do you sometimes have to cut huge swathes out of it just to find the golden nuggets?
Well, look at it this way. The date is about 2 hours. Yeah. So that's 2 hours of content. 30-odd cameras in the restaurant.
30 cameras?
30 cameras.
This production cost must be extraordinary.
I probably just saw five.
Is it one night of everyone being there?
No. We did 60 dates over 10 days.
Wow.
10 days.
So we did
okay.
6 dates a day.
And not everyone is featured? Everyone on the dates?
Pretty much... I think 60 of the dates that came through, I think we had 61 dates that came into the restaurant.
Okay.
There was only one date that didn't happen.
Hmm. All right. Use the same restaurant every time?
Yeah. So we took over, I don't know if you know, in Greenside, there was a restaurant called Shadowboxer, and it had stood empty for a year.
Oh, wow.
And it was completely full of rubble and dust. Okay. We went in, it took us 4 weeks to transform it into a sort of bespoke restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Put our 30 cameras in, all the cabling.
And so... who did you have in there in terms of chefs or staff? Was it a restaurant that already existed in terms of staff?
No, completely
all put together.
Complete pop-up.
Wow.
So we got in a chef, Arnold Tanzer, who's actually quite well-known master chef and all sorts of other things. Arnold put a great team together for us, and we put our own menu together, had our own cocktail menu, you know, put the whole thing, and then we cast... But Sile and Travis, the barman, and
Joey.
Is it a maitre d' if you're a male as well?
And a female, yeah.
Both?
Yes.
He's lovely.
But Sile.
Yeah.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah, Travis is also lovely.
And Travis has also got loads of personality.
Travis is cool, and he keeps juggling this. You know,
is he a real barman?
Yeah, no, he's one of the best in South Africa.
Wow. Okay, so I'm interested in the people in the show, the dates themselves.
Yeah.
You get these thousands of entries.
Yeah.
And then you have to sift through them. And what are you looking for? Because you've got to make great TV out of this.
Yeah.
You know, you're the genius here. The Gugu and people like that, they're your chess pieces. You're trying to make great TV. How do you choose the talent that's going to deliver the best stuff for your show?
So we 3,000 people, and we read all the applications.
All of them?
All of them.
Oh, and sure, some of them you can.
So there's a cast team. So some of them you just go, nah.
Terrible people.
And then, oh, wow, that one pops. This one pops. Okay. She's amazing. God, he's incredible.
What are those things that make it pop? I'm trying to get... Because, you know, people are going to write entries into these shows. Everyone wants to be famous.
I've been looking for love my whole life.
There are these people, these sad, desperate people too that you're going to pick up. Some of them
if you'd written, I fell in love after I just killed my 1.8-meter snake with a guy who helped me, you know, that pops.
That's a good story.
So there's a backstory. Wow, that sounds interesting. So
I'll definitely be on the show.
Next time. So you're looking for those little backstories and for people who pop. And that's just the first scope off the written thing. Then we start phoning. So we started off with 3,000. We phoned nearly 2,000 people. And on the phone, boring as anything, you know, thanks. Somebody's engaging, pops, you know, so another tick. And out of that short list, then we go to video interviews. Either they come in on camera or we do it on Skype. And somebody either pops and go, actually, Gugu, he's pretty cool. And we've got Cindy over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's exotic.
Match them up.
He's looking for exotic. Could that be?
Both like cars.
You know,
Yeah.
So sure. We actually cut it down into, we had a whole lot of A.
You could, this is a full-time business. You're, I mean, yeah. Like, forget the TV show, but you could actually run a matchmaking business
here. Like a Tinder
here.
Well, I think
machine.
That's where we were, you know. Why are we doing TV?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the TV part is expensive and it's hard to produce. Yeah. And there's a lot of work that goes in here. People don't understand how much editing you have to do. How you eventually have to put it together, you create an episode out of these three people, for example, or whatever. Yeah. It's really hard work. You've got to love it, right?
You've got to love it. But this was a very special show. It's very authentic. It's very genuine.
Very, and it's quite classy.
And you're
too.
Not setting people up to be... A lot of reality TV is about setting up for conflict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is about setting up for love, actually. So we weren't trying to set up Cindy and Gugu with the hope that they were going to fight. We wanted them to fall in love and have that second date.
That's why I enjoy watching this.
So it was a
series.
Very heartwarming production, and you must understand that while the dates are going on, you know, in downstairs, we're all up in the production gallery and we're cheering people on.
Really?
I don't know, was it Alison who worked with you?
Yeah, Alison.
So, I mean, Alison had was invested in you
and
all the others.
She knew everything about me. It's insane.
When your date was going well, you know, people at Alison are going, yes.
Well, the attention is good. That's nice.
That's
it makes a difference.
You can feel it when you're watching it.
And just to say about the last you were talking about earlier, you know, most people present themselves in a certain way when we're interviewing them and prepping them up.
Yeah.
And then it was weird what happened on the date. Some of the people just bombed out or came in with an attitude, or they'd had a bad day. You know, because it was a genuine thing. You've just come out of work and now you're in front of 30 cameras and you're trying to have a date and it doesn't work for you. So.
Well, it all makes for good TV.
That's fantastic.
All right, so if we put Sia and Leanne on your show next.
Oi.
As a date.
No, that's not possible.
No, not the two of them. No. If we put Sia on and then we put Leanne on and you found people for them. They could be very difficult people. You've said you had difficult people on the show before. And they come in and maybe they've had a bad day, but there are also some people who are just undateable, right? There are some people who are just awful, awful people.
Leanne, what is he trying to say about us?
No, I don't know.
I'm not getting it.
I'm waiting for the point.
Yeah.
Tell me about the worst people you've had on the show.
All I want to say is that there's a date for somebody. There's always a match for somebody. So we had some unlikely people.
Yeah.
And with the greatest love and respect, I don't think Walter would mind. So Walter, who was on this week's show, to many people might seem not an obviously dateable guy.
What was wrong with him?
No, he was just very shy and very reserved. Oh. And I want to say that Walter is very open, so I can say this. Walter is very open about the fact that he is very deeply squint. He has a very special eye condition.
Dude.
Jesus, all right.
No, but he actually is very upfront about it.
Yeah,
and
he made jokes about it.
Not like you can hide it, really.
Yeah.
We found the most wonderful...
Did you find a squint girl for him?
No. And they had a wonderful date and they went on for other dates.
Oh, did they?
That's lovely.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yes. They're not dating now, but they had the second date.
They had a good innings.
Yeah.
Have you ever had people who got married as a result of the show?
Not yet in South Africa, but overseas one or two.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that
it's woman. It's a genuine journey.
I love that woman. I think it was, obviously the first or the second episode, Afrikaans woman with, older woman with very vibrant blonde hair and she loved motorbikes.
Yes, and sailing.
Where did you find her? She was amazing.
Well, and she popped off her application form and then we had, her date was a guy called Roy who was 64. Yes. She was 63. He was 64. And they drank a lot of wine and they were having the most amazing time in the restaurant and around them were these young couples who didn't know what to say to each other. And we found often that it was the older people who actually they've got life stories, they've got stuff to tell, they've got experiences.
And they're not trying to impress each other, they're just being themselves.
They're just being themselves.
Do you ask these applicants things like, because I mean it's very important to some men that women are either curvaceous or not fat or very skinny. Do you ask them those questions?
Yes.
I was asked.
Okay. Yeah, they asked.
Because that for me is...
I can't remember what you ticked.
Well, they said to me, physically, what do you want it to be? And I said, I spoke about thick because thick right now is like a thing.
Trendy.
And it's fat people, obviously. So I said, not thick. She could be athletic. She could be slim.
Once again, comparing girls to
but
the
that's really nice
cars.
Because if you pitch up as a thick girl, I hate that term.
Yeah,
I don't like it either. Because you think thick means stupid.
Then you know that he's not expecting Twiggy to walk in.
Right. Nobody even knows who Twiggy is.
One of the
is,
big
Lee
questions there. That came out at the end of each date was, mm-hmm. who pays?
Oh.
On the first date. And I can't, Gugu, I can't remember what you said.
I can't remember what I said either.
Did you pay?
I did pay.
You
did
pay.
I did
paid? Pay. Okay.
Paid, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you didn't expect that from me.
Don't side-eye me, because you also called yourself stupid on television.
Oh.
Talk about...
I did not. Well, you know, you I talk a lot of crap, guys. She paid me a compliment.
She
at
called
the
you
end.
Smart, and smart. You said, and I thought I was stupid.
I always thought I was stupid, thanks.
But that's also because Gareth has
because Gareth,
once
yeah.
told you to wear a dunce cap and sit
Gareth
in the corner.
Cliff.
Well, look, I also like the car puns that were in the entire episode, like getting your hearts revving.
Yeah.
You're okay. done with
yeah,
the single
good.
Lane.
Well, Gugu put us on that on
fast
that path,
track you know. To love.
Well, this is all very cool. I think it's a terrific show. Well yeah. done to you for producing it. I'm sure it's getting the ratings. People are enjoying it, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Very good. Yeah. And if you could set Gugu up, you could pretty much move
There's
mountains.
Hope for anyone, hey?
Yes.
You know,
there's hope for anyone.
I think what's interesting to me as well is that a lot of shows that have been popular overseas and then they're brought to South Africa, they're just cringeworthy. Mm. But this isn't. It's just genuine and good.
And a lot of people say, how do you make international formats local?
Yeah.
You know, how do you localize them?
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's just because it's all South Africans. And so, you know, we're seeing ourselves.
Yeah.
We're seeing a very broad representation of South Africa in front of us. It's fantastic.
Well, what a pleasure to have you in here, Ed. And what other shows are you busy working on at the moment? Is this project now finished and you're waiting for the next one?
Well, we are halfway through filming the next season of The Bachelor.
Oh, you're on that as well?
Well, the company is. I'm not
okay,
personally on that.
All right.
We're getting ready for Steve Harvey coming into the country.
That's right.
Family Feud.
Lots
I've
of stuff.
I've just been up in... East Africa, doing East Africa's Got Talent in Kenya, Rwanda,
wow.
Tanzania, and Uganda.
That's so where you found Cindy.
Good yeah. one.
But yeah, so life is good.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like it's very busy at Rapid Blue.
Yeah.
Good work. All right. Nice to see you. Thank you for popping in and saying hi to us this
Thanks,
morning.
Thanks, guys. See you on season two.
Very Yay. Good. Make sure you don't miss season two of First Dates. And well done to Gugu for being a good sport, not being mean to Cindy, and saying he was stupid.
I learned some things from you, but not everything, Gareth.
Yeah. I just think that you shouldn't pretend that there's going to be another date when we all know that there wasn't. Right? We all know. Your intention was clear. So Standard Bank are committed to driving growth on the continent that we call home. The African Continental Free Trade Agreement has moved from being a pipe dream to a reality, and it will enable the free flow of goods and services across Africa. This is actually pretty important, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, and can have massive ramifications for businesses. So in a video which Cliff Central will release on social media next week, Standard Bank's head of trade and project management, Kevin Holmes, speaks to MoneyWeb editor Rek van Niekerk on the challenges of implementing the African Free Trade Area and the need for government and the private sector to work together to unlock the opportunities that this brings. So be sure to check out cliffcentral.com on Monday to find out more. Very exciting. That's the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. And we will speak to Kevin Holmes from Standard Bank and MoneyWeb editor Rek van Niekerk on the challenges of implementing that African Free Trade Area. Make sure you don't miss it next week. Look who's here. It's George Meany. It's time for our final Friday update, which is always the nicest thing because it means your Friday begins when George comes in.
How's it, Gareth?
How are you?
And Sia. Good.
Good.
Very good.
Do you think also it would be challenging to set Sia and Leanne up on a first date? Be honest, George. You don't have to
I
be,
feel very sorry for anyone who
no,
would
you
set
would,
up with me.
Are you kidding? You would be hilarious.
I think
would love to go on a first date with you if I didn't know you. Because you have stories. You'd be hilarious.
I think Sia, yes. Leanne would be challenging, but once in the date, I think not so challenging.
Also, I have to draw a line of how much I reveal on a first date.
But first of all, confidence is 90% of it. Right, George?
Yes. Confidence is 90% of it, but that's why the initial date will be hard. But once you're in it, I think it'll be fun.
Okay, so Leanne and Sia and Gugu, there's lots of confidence, so that's not a problem. But then... the more you share and the more you kind of know about each other during that first date, the better you feel at the end of it. Even if you haven't felt an attraction to each other, if you're sharing stuff, that's what makes humans connect. You'll get up and you'll go, wow, that was amazing.
We'd have to do it together so I could go on smoke breaks and we could Koch and giggle.
Let's double date.
I think it would be fun.
That would be the
best idea.
I think
we should get you guys on. Yeah, you double date. You sit at tables like at opposite ends of the restaurant. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at each other the whole time.
It would be too hilarious. Telling. I know Leanne's eye rolls now when she purses her lips. It would mean too much. I would know exactly what's going
whether
on with that
good
date.
Or bad.
Yeah.
All right. So, George, what's happening in the world of motoring?
The world's first urban air taxi has taken flight in Singapore.
Ooh. I've been waiting
Gareth,
for this.
Gareth, it's your dream.
This is what I've been waiting
Gareth,
for.
Off to Singapore. Have you booked your flight? Because German air mobility startup Volocopter debuted its urban taxi prototype in Singapore on Tuesday. Amid hopes that the city-state will become the first country to allow the commercial launch of its services, possibly towards early 2021 or late 2020. So the Volocopter taxi took off from Marina Bay, located near the central business district, and took flight for about a minute and then landed with its 18 propellers still spinning.
Fantastic.
A minute, but it probably went 20 Ks in distance.
Exactly.
Well, here's a question before we move on with any of these. Gugu, I'm going to need you in here as well for this one. George and Gugu, is a question that has to do with buying and selling a car. Tato wants to know, when is the ideal time of year to buy a car? I'm assuming not November, December because of the consumer craze. I'm looking for a new small hatchback, something like a VW 1.6 Highline or any other suggestions that you two might have. Guys, do you want to take care of this one?
I would say if it's a car low in demand, so a low demand car, which is not a Polo Vivo, not a BMW, not a Mercedes.
Not a Toyota.
Not a Toyota.
So a low demand car. Then first quarter of the year is probably the best time because the prices would have just declined. If it's a high demand car, anything's possible. The prices may actually go up when you move from December to January. So you've got to watch the prices carefully and, you know, when it's a high demand car like a Polo Vivo, you've got to almost look at it like a stock market. Buy when the price goes down.
I'd also say buy before the newer model is launched. So if they're launching the new Polo, they're trying to get rid of stock just before they launch the new one. So they drop the prices. So that, for me, is also an ideal time to buy.
When it comes to new car, absolutely right. When there's an imminent launch, usually there's massive specials on the current model.
Look at how helpful it is for you two to be here this morning when Tato needs advice on his car. All right, fantastic.
Welcome, Tato.
There we go. Okay, what else, George?
Electric vehicles are, part of their drive is becoming a green environment or trying to drive the environmentally friendly, non-carbon world. And in Japan, the Ministry of the Environment believes that this new wooden car.
A wooden car.
Ooh. So they've made a car entirely out of fiber. Apparently it is 5 times lighter than steel, but 5 times stronger.
I believe that. They are
sure,
developing.
You don't want to drive over the Huguenot Bridge with that.
Whoa. It could float, surely.
The problem is the wind there.
Oh, right.
You the need way a bit, it blows over trucks.
Yeah, you need to kind of be a bit heavier. Yeah. But I think that sounds good, right? Yeah. If it's much stronger and it's much lighter, that has fuel ramifications, all kinds of things.
And so this whole drive is making manufacturing green. So we've made the cars green, in terms of electric, but the manufacturing process is still not green. And making cars out of fiber makes the manufacturing process green.
I hate
green.
To be the Grinch, but what about flammability?
Well, I'm pretty sure they could add things that make it
flame retardant. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember also that your steel car or your aluminium frame car, the stuff that burns isn't the frame. It's all that soft stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, the upholstery, the dashboard, that stuff. You're very flammable.
Spontaneous combustion in some of us.
All right.
And then an update on the Bloodhound. So the Bloodhound started its tests officially. They battled to get the jet engine started, but eventually turned the Bloodhound into the wind, and that little bit of forced induction through the blades of the jet engine got them to start it, because apparently it'd been in storage for quite a while.
Right.
On the vehicle's first run, they limited it to 160 kilometers an hour. Remember, the Bloodhound is at the Hokkien Pan in Northern Cape. Right. And this was purely to check the brakes and wheels and the stability of the car. The second outing doubled that speed using maximum what they call power without extra fuel for reheat in this jet engine, followed by a coast down to measure the rolling resistance. And then the third run saw the team using the full reheat capabilities of the jet engine and reached 483 kilometers per hour in 13 seconds.
That's amazing. That's fast. I was watching old car adverts on YouTube. And I've seen most of them before, but the one that made me think about this was a BMW ad where they had one of these sound-breaking fast vehicles on sand. And there was obviously a camera next to the vehicle filming it. And when it comes to a stop, the guy gets out of his BMW with the camera. And he's the one who's been keeping up to it next to it.
I think I know which ad you're talking about. Yeah. It's a very well made ad. You don't kind of see it coming unless you watch to the end. But I'm looking forward to seeing the Bloodhound reach 1,600 kilometers an hour.
Sure.
So testing continues.
Yeah, and as I said last time, if there's one little stone that they find on that track, on that pan, then it can be devastating.
Yes.
So they have people who are actually going there with like a little rake or a little broom.
Like for those mini Zen gardens.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And they actually have to remove every little rock and stone. Phenomenal.
Apparently 22 million square kilometers or something that they removed stones from that Huskian.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then I've been driving the BMW i3 electric car for the last week, and sadly I have to give it back today.
You love it, huh?
Oh.
Fun, right?
I tell you, Gareth, I didn't think I would love this car as much as I have.
Really?
And the top feature for me is the immediate power.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Absolute immediate power.
You don't even have to use the brake that much.
Yes.
You just know how to use the accelerator and you can slow down and speed up when you need to. It's amazing that you never need to fill up with fuel.
Well,
did you charge every day? How did you do it?
So I got it last Friday, and then initially I was nervous because I didn't know how quickly this it's got the battery percentage like your phone, and then it's got the range that you can travel. So I drove it over the weekend, and then Sunday night I charged it. And I charged it full, and I went to work on Monday morning, and I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll see how far I can push the car before I start getting nervous. And I got, as a matter of fact, yesterday morning I got to 80 kilometer range left at about 30% battery. And at that point I was like, no, I'm somewhere in the back of my mind, Gareth said to me, don't go to 10%.
No, I got down to 10% one day, and then I started getting a little bit nervous.
I was getting nervous at 30. So you do get that anxiety too.
Man, the idea of never having to go to a petrol station. I had to fill up yesterday, and you watch your money just being burnt.
That's so true. That's so true. Anyway. So BMW i3, I think maybe because I've driven it, best electric car in the country so far. I want to get my hands on the I-Pace next.
I'm with you. All right, everybody. That's all we got time for this morning. Thank you for joining us. We will catch you on Monday morning, 6 a.m., bright and early. It's November, and it's Friday. Have an excellent weekend. CliffCentral.com.